So, first of my four messages. And I was just thinking recently about my spiritual life. At the end of my ministry in France, 12 years as pastor of a church, I took some time out last year to think about where was I with God. Had I moved on? Had I done things better? Was I closer to God than what I had been 12 years ago? And sometimes I'm tempted to get the impression that it's just too hard. That the bar is just too high. A bit like the pole jump. The bar's up there. And we can look at that and we think, I'll never be able to do that. That's more what my spiritual life is like. Like a little toddler walking along, tripping up over a stone. You know, when we read Christian books, they can do us a lot of good. They can encourage us in our spiritual walk. They can help us move forward. They can help us treat different areas of our life that we've been struggling with. But sometimes, some books can be quite discouraging. Instead of encouraging us, they could put that bar so high that it makes us feel, am I ever going to be able to manage that? When you read some of the biographies and the stories about missionaries, you see these amazing men and women of God and amazing things that they did. But sometimes, some things are not in those books. When you actually read some of the later Christian books, some of the ones that have been written over the last 20, 25 years, we actually discover that their lives weren't perfect. When we hear some of the missionaries who went out to countries in Africa and who worked there and who did amazing things, and then you hear that they left their wife and seven children at home and didn't see them for 5, 6 years, you think, okay. So maybe life wasn't quite so rosy. One American missionary in the 60s, whose name I have just forgotten, he and several other missionaries worked with the New Tribes Mission in South America, and they were killed for their faith. And years later, I heard his wife talking about his life. His name was Jim something or other. It'll come to me. Jim Elliott, thank you. I would have been worrying about that all day. And I heard his wife speak, and she said, you know, Jim was an amazing man of God, an extraordinary man of God, and I still have got great admiration for his faith. She said, but you know, Jim struggled through his whole life with smoking. He was never able to give up tobacco. And she said, you know, I gave that testimony one other time. She said, people came up to me at the end of the meeting, really angry. And she said, there was a group of people around me really angry that I had taken this man of God and I had pulled him down from his pedestal. And she said, it was my husband. I loved him. She said, but that was who he was. He struggled in areas of his life. We all struggle in different areas in our lives. And I thought, you know, there's one book where we can always read what people are truly like, warts and all, and that's the Bible. So this series is called People Just Like Us. Now that's just a photograph I found on the internet. What I'm going to do, so that I've got a photograph from next Sunday, is I'm going to take a photograph of us. Next Sunday, if you come, you'll see your faces up there. People just like us. Over the next four Sundays, I'm going to talk about different people. Some you know really well. Others you may not have heard that much of. And today, I just want to start with three. Hannah, Eli, and Samuel. A wee quiz for you as well. something I want you to look out for. I want you to look out for the odd word in French. As most of you will know, I've been working in France over nearly the last 30 years, and I wrote this message in English, and I looked at it this morning just 2 minutes before I left the house and realised there was a whole stack of French words that had somehow got into it, and I copied and pasted and they were on virtually every page, so I had a quick run through. But there may be the odd, so there'll be a prize for the person who spots the odd French words. It's a wee test for you this morning. I'd like to say I did it on purpose, but I did not. Hannah, Eli and Samuel. This is situated in Israel in about 1150 BC, towards the end of the period that we call the Judges. The Judges ruled, governed Israel between the time of the Promised Land, the entry into the Promised Land, until Saul was named or anointed king. The Ark of the Covenant, containing the Ten Commandments, was in Shiloh. It wasn't in Jerusalem, it was still in Shiloh, which is in Samaria. So the first person I want to look at is a woman called Hannah. This is what we read in 1 Samuel. There was a certain man from Ramathim whose name was Elkanah. He had two wives, one called Hannah and the other one called Peninnah. Peninnah had children, but Hannah had none. Year after year, this man went up from his town to worship and sacrifice to the Lord Almighty at Shiloh. Whenever the day came for Elkanah to sacrifice, he would give portions of the meat to his wife Peninnah and to all his sons and daughters. But to Hannah he had gave a double portion because he loved her, and the Lord had closed her womb. Because the Lord had closed Hannah's womb, her rival kept provoking her in order to irritate her. And you can imagine what that life must have been like for Hannah, the senior wife who wasn't able to have children. She probably didn't have a great deal going for her. She had the position of being the first wife. She was not able to produce any children. And her husband had taken a second wife. And they'd had lots of children. And Hannah was being bullied and ridiculed and made fun of by the other wife. And probably in the town that they lived in, other people would be sniggering and laughing at her as well. She was put down because she couldn't have children. But she had one thing going for her. Her husband, Elkanah, loved her and looked out for her. What was going on in the state of Israel at that time? We have a priest called Eli, who was responsible for the spiritual life of Israel at the time. But things were not going well. We think that the spiritual state of Scotland, of Great Britain, Northern Ireland, Southern Ireland, at the minute is not great. We would all agree with that, wouldn't we? It was not any better in 1150 BC. In Judges it says, in those days Israel had no king, and everyone did as they saw fit. You can imagine what that means. Israel was at the lowest place that could be. Corruption was rife. Morale was at its lowest ebb. Then spiritual life of the nation as well was at its lowest place. Eli, who had been the priest at the temple, was now old, and he could no longer control his own two sons, who had taken up positions of authority within the church. This is what the Bible says about his sons. Eli's sons were scoundrels. They had no regard for the Lord. Now, it was the practice of the priests, that whenever any of the people offered a sacrifice, the priest's servant would come with a three-pronged fork in his hand while the meat was being boiled, and would plunge the fork into the pan or kettle or cauldron or pot. Whatever the fork brought up, the priest would take itself. And this is how they treated all the Israelites who came to Shiloh. Even before the fat was burned, the priest's servant would come and say to the person who was sacrificing, "Give the priest some meat to roast." He won't accept boiled meat from you, but only raw. If the person said to them, "Let the fat be burned first, as it was supposed to be done, then take whatever you want." The servant would answer, "No, hand it over now. If you don't, I'll take it by force." The sin of the young men was very great in the Lord's sight, for they were treating the Lord's offering with contempt. Now Eli, who was very old, heard about everything his sons were doing to all Israel and how they slept with the woman who served at the entrance to the tent of meeting. So he said to them, "Why do you do such things? I hear from all the people about these wicked deeds of yours. No, my sons. The report I hear spreading about the Lord's people is not good." His sons, however, did not listen to the father's rebuke. Can you imagine what it would be like to be a believer in those days? To go to the temple to have your offering stolen from you by the priests? The fact that they were sleeping with the woman who served at the temple? Things were not good in Israel. And then we have Hannah. Right, Hannah. Okay. Let's go back to that. It's what? Mistake. In French, she's called Anne. Now, Eli the priest was sitting on his chair by the doorpost of the Lord's house. In her deep anguish, Hannah prayed to the Lord, weeping bitterly. As she kept on praying to the Lord, Eli observed her mouth. Hannah was praying in her heart, and her lips were moving, but her voice was not heard. And this is what Eli said to her. Eli thought she was drunk and said to her, "How long are you going to stay drunk? Put away your wine." So in addition to what Eli's sons were doing and the way they were behaving, we get a little impression of what was going on in the temple when Eli the priest saw this woman and assumed she was drunk. What on earth was going on in Israel at that time when Eli the priest was witnessing people coming to the service drunk? Hannah replied, "Not so, my lord. I am a woman who is deeply troubled. I've not been drinking wine or beer. I was pouring out my soul to the Lord. Do not take your servant for a wicked woman. I've been praying here out of my great anguish and grief." Eli answered, "Go in peace. And may the God of Israel grant you what you have asked him." And here we have a woman who is suffering. A woman who has been not able to give birth, has not able to provide children for her husband, who is under pressure, who's been rejected, who's been bullied and hassled. And she comes to God's house and she's treated as a drunk. Now this woman has incredible faith in God. She comes before God and she breaks down and she cries out to God that God will bless her, that God will help her. And I was amazed to see the faith of this woman through this story. Hannah and Samuel. And after this prayer and the prayer of blessing by Eli, we find Hannah became pregnant and gave birth to a son. She named him Samuel, saying, because I asked the Lord for him. My prayer was for this child, and the Lord has given him to me in answer to my request. So I have given him to the Lord. For all his life, he is the Lord's. Samuel did the work of the Lord's house while he was a child, dressed in a linen ephod, and his mother made him a little robe and took it to him every year when she came with her husband for the year's offering. And every year Eli gave Elkanah and his wife a blessing, saying, "May the Lord give you offspring by this woman in exchange for the child you have given to the Lord." And they went back to their house, and the Lord had mercy on Hannah, and she gave birth to 3 sons and 2 daughters. And the young Samuel became older before the Lord. Now today, we may not think that that is a huge blessing, to have a first son, and then 3 more sons, and then 2 daughters. But in that time, that was seen as a sign of blessing. And Hannah was faithful to her vow. She prayed to God and said, "If you give me a child, I will give him into your service to serve you in the temple." And that's exactly what she did. With the support of her husband, they dedicated their son to serve God. She never forgot that God had heard her prayer and answered it. She never forgot her son, bringing him clothes that she made for him every year. And I assume that she made clothes bigger and bigger. As he grew older, she would make a different size every year. And God blessed them with more children. And now, instead of being despised and laughed at and ridiculed, she could hold her head high as the mother of a big family. And I was really touched as I prepared this message by the faith of that woman, the mother of Samuel. Now we come to Eli and Samuel. Meanwhile, the boy Samuel served the Lord by assisting Eli. Now, in those days, messages from the Lord were very rare, and visions were quite uncommon. It's hardly surprising when we see the state of the religion and the faith in Israel at that time. When we see what was going on in the temple, it's hardly a surprise. One night, Eli, who was almost blind by now, had gone to bed. The lamp of God had not yet gone out, and Samuel was sleeping in the tabernacle near the ark of God. Suddenly, the Lord called out, "Samuel." "Yes," Samuel replied. "What is it?" He got up and ran to Eli. "Here I am. Did you call me?" "I didn't call you," Eli replied. "Go back to your bed." So he did. Sad to think that there was a time when God didn't speak, or people didn't hear what God was saying. And Eli, when Samuel said someone had spoken to him, Eli didn't think that it could possibly be God speaking to Samuel. Samuel did not know the Lord because he had never had a message from the Lord before. Samuel, born into this terrible place of Israel, had maybe never heard about God. Although he was serving them in the temple, he'd never heard from God. God had never spoken to him. He didn't have a personal relationship with God. For the next few Sunday nights, I would like to go through what it means and what we do and we say when God speaks to us. The series is going to be called 10 Things. 10 things to say to God when he speaks, and 10 things not to say to God when he speaks. So if you can come along on a Sunday evening, we're going to hear how to react when God speaks. And I hope that God does speak in Stranraer. And it's not Stranraer who we could replace with Israel. God didn't speak much in those times. interesting note. I think you need to come along tonight and we'll look at what happens when God speaks. God does speak to us, doesn't he? Oof. That's a relief. The Lord called a third time. And once more Samuel got up and went to Eli. Here I am. Did you call me? Then Eli realized it was the Lord who was calling the boy. So he said to Samuel, go and lie down again. If someone calls to you, say, speak, Lord, your servant is listening. So Samuel went back to bed, and the Lord came and called as before, Samuel, Samuel. And Samuel replied, speak, your Lord is listening. Then the Lord said to Samuel, and Samuel, who had never heard God speaking to him before, heard God speaking to him. And what he had to say was a terrible message. And just imagine if God gave me the message that he gave to Samuel for his first message. And basically, it was against Eli and Eli's sons. And it was a terrible message. The next morning, Samuel stayed in bed until morning, then got up and opened the doors of the tabernacle as usual. He was afraid to tell Eli what the Lord had said to him. But Eli called out to him, Samuel, my son. Here I am, Samuel replied. What did the Lord say to you? Tell me everything. And may God strike you and even kill you if you hide anything from me. So Samuel told Eli everything. He didn't hold anything back. It is the Lord's will, Eli replied. Let him do what he thinks best. And sometimes God speaks to us. And sometimes God says, I want you to take a message to someone. I want you to go and say this to someone. I want you to bring this to the church. And that's what Samuel's first message was. This message which meant the end of the time for Eli and his sons. If you want to read that, read in 1 Samuel chapter 4, what happened to Eli and his sons. We don't know what happened to Eli's wife. There's no mention of him. But we see him as a weak old man, almost blind, who could not control his children. And the end of the story is terrible. But despite that, Eli keeps his faith in God. It is the Lord's will. Let him do what he thinks best. Eli, a man of God, but yet through the years, and maybe through bringing up his sons on his own, let things go. Now we come to our last part, Samuel. Samuel, you're this young man who'd been dedicated to God by his mother, by his father, brought up in the temple, served Eli the priest, and now his time was coming. As Samuel grew up, the Lord was with him, and everything Samuel said proved to be reliable. And all Israel, from Dan in the north to Beersheba in the south, knew that Samuel was confirmed as a prophet of the Lord. The Lord continued to appear at Shiloh and give messages to Samuel there at the tabernacle. Things are changing in Israel. Eli has been removed, as has his sons. God is speaking and someone is listening. God is speaking and Samuel is bringing a message from God to the people. He'll later go on to found what we would call a Bible college today, a school of the prophets, where he was taking other young people and training them up to be prophets, God's mouthpieces, spreading God's words. God was speaking and people were listening and people were recognizing that Samuel was prophet of God, and that God was speaking. He would become the prophet who would anoint the first king of Israel, Saul. And then he would go record the sentence against Saul and say, God has taken his Holy Spirit from you. He's removed you from royalty, from the throne, and he's appointed another king, David. And we see Samuel anoint David as king over Israel. The time of the judges has come to an end, and the people have asked for a king. Sadly, they asked for a king because of the behavior of Samuel's own sons. I'm not going to go into that this morning. Read up. Take that passage from Samuel. Read through it and see how Samuel eventually lost control of his own children. And we see in these stories, these men of God, prophets, priests, in charge of the spiritual life of Israel, but who let things go, who fell down, who were weak, and who made errors. But yet God used them. God spoke through Samuel. And we see the incredible faith in the lives of Samuel. And even Eli, even in his last days, we see that incredible faith he had in God and that acceptance of what God was going to do. But the person that stands out this morning is Hannah. This woman who had a hard time, had a lot of things going against her. And it's a terrible thing for her to not be able to have children. And even today, in the last church, we had three young couples who were not able to have children. And some of the things that people said in their families, and even in the church, not our church, which is where why they came to our church, but in the previous church, who would say the most amazingly cruel things to them by saying, oh, you can't have children. Is there maybe some sin in your life? Maybe we need to pray for you. Maybe you need to be forgiven. Maybe you need to forgive someone. And these young people were devastated. And Hannah was in that same situation, ridiculed, laughed at, but had faith in God. And we see how God responded to her and blessed her with children. And now she didn't forget about it. Because how often we ask God for things. We pray to God for things. And then he answers our prayer. And then we forget all about it. But Hannah never forgot. She took her child, and with the support of her husband, she dedicated him to God's service. Who are we like this morning? Can we see ourselves in Hannah? Can we see ourselves in Eli or Samuel? Have I put the bar too high? You find you're still walking about on all fours, trying to stand up, trying to make it through another week. These were people just like us, with all the faults and failings, with all of weaknesses and strengths, and God used them, and God called them to serve him. So I want you to think about that for a few moments in the silence, and then we'll pray. Ask you this morning to speak to each one of us. We don't want to be in church just for out of pure tradition, to come to an empty building where you don't speak. We want to be in a place where you speak and that we listen and we put into action what you've said to us. I want to pray that this morning may be a time when we can come before before you and listen to what you're saying to us. Maybe you're saying that we have had a bad week. There may be things that we need to take time to ask forgiveness, to forgive maybe someone else. We may have been so busy that we've never actually sat down and taken 5 minutes to just pray. We've maybe taken no time at all to read your word. We've been so busy in life. But Lord, even just in these few moments of silence before you, will you forgive us? Will you help us to stand again and continue that walk of faith that you've called us to?